Chapter 16.
After his briefing, Azur Nessun felt sure he could monetize Nikari's information about Fex, brain-sucking skull borers and all, and allowed us to pick the fastest engine available on the planet that would fit the jewel.
The engine won't get here for a couple of days, at least. You must be exhausted, he said. Let's get you a place to lie low while this gets sorted out. I will be in touch.
We ducked back into the ship to get hooded cloaks before departing to a hotel near the spaceport. I worried that R2 was probably recognizable, but he could plausibly be any astromech droid of his series and not necessarily the one involved in the operation on Deenon. Utterly exhausted after a day that began in another part of the galaxy, I fell asleep almost as soon as I crashed onto the bed. After a night's well-earned sleep, we ordered room service and ate together in my room. We thought it wiser than showing our faces in the hotel's buffet. Or anywhere. Drusel hadn't slept much. She'd spent most of the night slicing into the accounts of Azur Nessun's employees.
The Wookiee was completely clean, she reported. As one might expect. They are not a species prone to sympathizing with a regime that commonly enslaves them. Another of the mechanics, Aduros, supplements his income by selling powdered Pazic horn off-planet as an aphrodisiac, but otherwise has no interest regarding us. The other two may present problems.
Which two are they?
Nikari asked.
Ra'uf Wala'uk and Mig Birkit, both Kupoans.
Glancing across the hangar at the light freighter next to the desert jewel, I noted that neither of the Kupoans was there. Only the Wookiee and the Duros had shown up for work today. Drusel continued.
I was able to stifle the initial efforts of the former, but unfortunately, the latter got off some communication to the Empire before I could interfere.
What kind of communication?
A general insistence that we are somewhere on Kupo, and he might be able to narrow down the search and point them in the right direction, for a fee. He didn't give our precise whereabouts, but the Empire is capable of tracing his transmission to this city, and presumably to his place of work. I erased the file, but they could have read it and acted before I did so.
Acted how?
They may be en route even now, looking for Mig Birkit and additional details. Or they may have contacted Confederates already on the planet. They may have reached him already.
Nikari cursed.
We can't stay, then.
We have no place else to go, I pointed out. And leaving now before we get repairs will only cause the rest of the crew to get suspicious. It would be better and simpler if Mig Birkit wasn't around to be questioned when the Empire comes looking for him.
So you're saying we should make him disappear?
Temporarily, I said. Not permanently. Maybe a couple of days tied up in a hotel room. He can be Azur Nessun's problem after that.
And if the Empire's already found him?
We may have to resort to permanent disappearing if that's the case. But only because he'll probably be shooting at us along with Imperial troops. The Given shook her head.
I doubt a single unconfirmed message would mobilize troops. More likely, it will mobilize an investigator or a lazy electronic request for more information. I will intercept any messages sent to Mig and Ra'uf, of course, but I cannot control his personal interactions.
That gives us a project for the day, I guess,
Nikari said.
Can't do anything without the replacement engine, and we'd have to hide out in our rooms instead. Actually, Drusel, that's probably what you should do in any case. Any Given seen on the street right now might draw more curiosity than we want.
I have no objections,
she replied.
I need to monitor communications in any case. But what will you do?
We'll go looking for Mig Birkit, I said. Nikari frowned.
Look where?
His house first, I said. I bet Drusel already has his address. She nodded. Failing that, we'll check the local cantinas.
You mean the places where anyone would sell us out for a drink?
We can go in disguise, underneath our hoods. Should be fine.
The investigator could be almost anyone,
Drusel cautioned.
The ISB won't advertise themselves by wearing a uniform.
We'll be careful.
Will you also try to discover if the Alliance successfully extracted my family?
Yeah, we'll look into it. We have a dead drop on the planet. Not sure if we'll get an answer before we leave, but it's worth a try. Drusel gave us Mig Burkett's address, and we walked her to her room. We left her with strict instructions not to open her door for anyone unless they used a passphrase.
Oh, can I give you one?
Drusel asked as we stood in the hallway, and she stood at the threshold. Her mouth stayed open a little bit, and that might have signaled a smile. Since she seemed excited about it, I said sure. But before she could speak, I motioned us into a room and then shut the door, in an attempt to keep us from being overheard. There hadn't been anyone in the hallway, but you couldn't be too careful on Kupo. I suggested she keep her voice down before giving it to us.
Excellent,
Drusel said in a whisper.
Knock however you wish, and then say product of P plus L times A plus N is equal to the summation of P times A plus P times N plus L times A plus L times N.
She left her mouth open a bit wider this time, expectant. But I didn't know why. Okay, that's a little long for a passphrase, but we'll do that. Her mouth closed.
Wait, don't you get it?
Get what?
I foiled your plan.
At our blank looks, the Gibbon's head drooped and stared at the floor.
Oddest joke in the galaxy, and it's completely wasted on humans. I miss my husband.
She pressed a button on the wall, and the door slid open behind us in a clear invitation to exit. Once we were out in the hall, Nakari snorted.
I get it now. It's a basic algebra thing. You have to picture it written down in High Galactic instead of listening to it. She must think we're unforgivably slow.
I guess we are in that area, but you and I have other redeeming qualities.
Oh, you mean our cooking skills?
I snorted. No, definitely not that. Plugging R2 into a public terminal and using him to encrypt our message, we requested an operational update on Drusel's family and left it in an Alliance one-time account, setting up another one for a reply. If the Alliance was on alert here, we'd hear back. We then did what we could to disguise our appearance and hailed a droid taxi to take us to Mig Burkett's address. It was a short ride through the streets of Tonic, to a slum where Burkett's home turned out to be a box-like economy space crammed into a large cube of similar spaces. The block of apartments had probably gleamed at one time, but that was long past, and it now possessed a lived-in look. Except the people here obviously lived with sickness, addiction, and despair. No children playing outside, just hooded figures like us, loitering, watching, hiding intentions as well as identities. It was little wonder that Burkett would jump at the chance to buy himself a better life.
I guess a ship mechanic doesn't make much here,
Nakari said.
Maybe not, but it shouldn't be this bad,
I said. He might have gambling debts or a checkered past. We felt eyes on us as we moved to Burkett's door and pressed the visitor chime. The console politely informed us that the room was currently unoccupied.
That was a waste of time, Nakari said.
Well, we know he's not missing work due to illness. Had to eliminate that as a possibility. Turning around, I met several dark-hooded stares that mirrored my own. And he'll be told someone is looking for him if he comes back. I knew that the Kapoans could hear me say that just fine, even though I didn't raise my voice. We visited two stale and smoky cantinas next, where no one had ever heard of Mig Burkett. But if we needed some information on Azernessin, we could have had it for a price. At the third cantina, the bartender had heard of Mig and was willing to tell us where he spent most of his time for a small consideration. We accepted, paid him, and he directed us to a fourth cantina that was only a kilometer away. We decided to walk, since the wind was mild and the sun was out, and the outdoor market in the district promised a journey surrounded by colorful stalls and loud sales calls.
"You know, if we weren't on a mission, I'd really enjoy this,"
Nikari half shouted in the wind.
"I might be getting used to the smell, whatever it is. You think it's the Pazik?"
"That's a good guess."
"It's kind of nice in a way. I mean, the strangeness of an alien world, when you're not worried about anything but experiencing it."
I agreed. Traveling through the galaxy would be perfectly pleasant, were it not for the Empire trying to kill us. We'd never gotten a really good look at Mig Birkett back at the hangar, so as we approached his alleged favorite spot, I wondered how we'd recognize him. Turned out, he made it easy for us. He walked out of the cantina wearing his gray and green Nessun courier uniform when we were still 20 paces away. Unfortunately, he recognized us too, even though we were somewhat disguised. We stuck out a little in Tonic as two humans. Hoods and robes were great for concealing details, but they couldn't hide the fact that we weren't built like Kapoans and didn't move like them. And it was tough to confuse us with other humans when there were so few others around in the local area. Most off-worlders stuck to the vicinity of the spaceport, and we were deep in the native part of town. With a snarled curse, Mig bolted around the corner, and we gave chase, R2 blatting a stream of noises that probably asked us to wait for him. I discovered in the space of 5 steps that Nikari was a much faster runner. She was taller and had a longer stride than me, but she was also in outstanding shape. She was faster than Mig, too. Before he could escape the alleyway and lose us in another crowded market street, Nikari pulled out her blaster and stunned him. She turned to me, licked her finger, and made an imaginary tally mark in the air.
"Chalk up 1 Imperial snitch for me. He won't be talking to anyone now."
"Good job. Shall we take him out to the street? Pretend he's a drunk friend coming out of the cantina and get a droid taxi back to the hotel?"
"Yeah, sounds good."
We hoisted Birkett up between us, Nikari on his left and me on the right, an arm draped over each of our shoulders, letting his feet drag behind. A chirp sounded from up ahead. When I looked up the alley to locate R2, I saw that he was coming, but another figure strode with purpose in front of him. It was a Godel with sienna skin and yellow eyes, thick brows supporting the sensitive horns that allowed his species to detect electromagnetic fields of all kinds. It made them excellent hunters, empathic to some extent with many species, and dangerous in confrontations, since they often sensed what you were planning to do before you did it. Han had warned me that many of them sympathized with the Empire.
"Excuse me," the Godel said. "That's my friend you have there. I was just about to meet him when he ran down this alley."
"He's our friend too," Nikari said, smooth and smiling. "Poor Mig had a few too many drinks and ran back here to be sick. We're taking him home."
"He's not unconscious from drinking," the Godel said, gesturing at his horns with a thumb. "I can tell. He's been stunned, and you stunned him."
Nonplussed, Nikari said,
"Whatever, friend. He still needs to be taken home. You want to come along?"
"No. I want you to let him go and tell me where the Given Woman is."
"What are you talking about?"
Nikari asked, exasperation in every word. But she lifted Mig's arm and ducked her head to obey at least the first part of it, while with her right hand, hidden behind Mig, she pulled out her blaster. She never got a shot off, though. Moving far faster than I expected, the Godel's left leg whipped out in a straight kick aimed at the side of Nikari's midsection, and it knocked the blaster out of her hand just as she was squeezing it between her body and Mig's to target the Godel. As she staggered backward, Mig's entire weight dragged on my left side, and without replanting his foot, Our attacker cocked his leg back at the knee, pivoted slightly, and kicked at my face. He connected, and I supposed I should be grateful he hadn't stepped into the kick. My nose remained unbroken, and I kept my teeth, but the impact dropped me and Mig to the ground. Nikari lunged forward, weaponless, and I heard more than saw blows being traded, smacks of fists on flesh, and grunts of pain and exertion. Rolling over and pushing myself onto unsteady feet, I managed to stand just as Nikari fell, her legs swept out from under her by the Godel. He wasn't an immediate kicking distance this time. He'd have to reset and take a few steps to get into range. And I remembered that I had a blaster. Couldn't remember if I set it to stun, though. He had a blaster, too, and he was remembering that at the same time I was. R2-D2 had an arm capable of delivering an electric shock, and the Godel never saw the strike coming from behind, having forgotten about the random droid he'd passed in the alley, and probably never expecting a droid to get involved. He screamed and clutched at his horns, which due to their electric sensitivity made such shocks doubly painful, and collapsed, twitching to the ground until he subsided, carried off into oblivion for a while. I breathed a sigh of relief.
Thanks, R2. I wasn't sure I would have beaten him to the draw.
You all right?
Nikari asked, rising and knocking dust from her pants.
I'm a bit woozy, and I think I'll be bruised and sore, but otherwise okay.
You?
Some bruises for sure.
That, she said, pointing at the Godel, is a dangerous individual. Coming at us like that, barehanded, with complete confidence? Crazy.
He had good reason to be confident. We weren't doing so well.
We have to take him with us. You heard him ask about the Given.
Yes, you're right. The story will be the same to any passerby. We just have two drunk friends we're escorting from the cantina back to our hotel. We lugged Mig and the Godel up the alley to the cantina entrance, making sure our hoods were back in place, and R2 summoned a droid taxi to take us back to the hotel. We got a few stares, but no one wanted to make our business theirs. Since it was only a short distance to the hotel, we were able to get our captives up to my room and stretched out on the large bed before they began to stir. Nikari promptly stunned them again.
We need something to bind them, she said.
And a guard.
Right. Be back soon.
The hotel concierge was a silver protocol droid, to which someone had hilariously applied a fake mustache. I made sure to keep my hood lowered to prevent him scanning my face for later download, and pitched my voice higher than normal to ask his help.
Say, do people around here enjoy mountain climbing?
The droid whirred and clicked before answering.
Absolutely, sir. It is quite the popular pastime in Tonic. Would you like some directions to nearby cliffs?
No, I know where I want to climb, but I'm a little low on supplies. Might you know where I can find ropes, rock hammers, that kind of thing?
Certainly, sir.
He gave me the address of a specialty vendor, and I hired one more taxi to take me there. The rope I bought wouldn't be foolproof binding, of course, but I could hardly ask the concierge where to buy stun cuffs without raising suspicion. I bought 4 coils along with some lunch and returned to find our prisoners conscious but lying very still, since Nikari and R2 both had weapons pointed at them.
What did I miss? I asked.
Nothing. I told them to be quiet until you got back, or I'd stun them again.
Great. I'm here now.
Hello, I said to the Godel. We haven't been formally introduced. Who might you be?
The Godel said,
You have made a huge mistake. I'm not some info sleek to be rolled over.
Do tell.
I'm an agent of the New Order. When I don't report in, the Empire will come looking for me. And when they do, they'll find you.
I don't think you're all that important, Nikari said. We know all the Imperial agents in the area, and I don't remember seeing a Godel on the list.
That was a lie.
so casually told that I almost believed it myself. The Godel sneered at her.
I'm not with Fleet Security. I'm with the ISB.
Nakari narrowed her eyes at him, then looked at me, her cool mask of control slipping into uncertainty. The ISB list we have isn't sorted by species. He might be telling the truth.
I shrugged, playing along with this charade of lists.
It's possible.
What's your name?
Nakari asked.
Barisk Faven.
That's the name you use with the ISB?
Yes, and the ISB is waiting for my report. Let me go, and I'll make sure they treat you well once you are captured.
Ignoring him, Nakari turned to me and said,
Will you check his name against our list?
Sure thing, I replied, and exited the room to go visit Drusel across the hall. Instead of trying to remember the equation she'd given me earlier, I just knocked and said, I foiled your plan, and she let me enter.
Luke Skywalker, your face is contused. Did you not capture Mig Birkett?
We did. We also have a Godel in my room who claims to be an ISB agent. Caught him trying to meet up with Mig. His name is Barisk Faven. Any way to figure out if he's an informant?
Let us see.
Moving to her custom hardware, Drusel tapped a series of commands at her keyboard and stared at the results. She repeated the process several times before finally saying,
Yes, he is. Dispatch to meet with Mig Birkett and investigate his claims, which means they saw that message after all. His orders are to report as soon as he knows anything.
So he's not supposed to report on a schedule?
I mean his personal files, and looking at the orders from his superior. There is nothing about a schedule here.
So he had lied about that. That's perfect. We can just hold on to him and the Empire won't pursue it. But keep monitoring that account. If you get any queries on his progress, tell the Empire that Birkett is currently unavailable, and you, or he, will report as soon as you have solid information one way or the other.
Should we not simply say that Birkett's information is faulty?
No, because then the ISB will reassign Barisk, and we want them to think he's occupied for a couple of days. We're just delaying them, so we tell them that Faven is following leads or confirming suspicions, but nothing specific.
Understood.
Returning to my room, I let Nakari know that Faven was indeed ISB, but we didn't have to worry about scheduled reports. Basically, we can hold on to him here.
So you are the fugitives,
he said.
Where's the given?
Elsewhere,
Nakari said, and then she stunned them both so that we could bind them easily. We tied up their wrists and ankles and enjoyed lunch together while we waited for them to wake up again. I recruited R2 to be their sentry, since I didn't especially want to spend any length of time in the same room with an ISB agent, and neither did Nakari. I had no desire to kill him, but it didn't seem wise to let him see or hear anything more about us than absolutely necessary, and we didn't want to listen to an endless stream of threats and Imperial propaganda either. Hotel rooms aren't ideal prisons, but knotted ropes can make decent restraints, and a tireless droid capable of delivering electric shocks makes a pretty good guard.
Don't complain too loudly, guys,
Nakari told them when they woke to find themselves bound.
You each get a soft bed. We'll bring you food, and you can watch whatever entertainment hollows you want. Try to move from the bed or call for help, and the droid will knock you out. If you need to use the bathroom, tell the droid and he will contact us via comm. Behave, and you'll be alive and free in a few days. And if you want a beating at the end to make it look to your superiors like you didn't enjoy yourselves, I'll be happy to administer one.
She smiled winningly.
All you have to do is ask.